Hello and welcome to Food for the Future podcast, broadcasting live from the World Food Forum headquarters in Rome, Italy. I'm Alexandra, your host, and I'm thrilled to introduce a new series featuring the Young Scientist Group, an inspiring group of emerging leaders working at the intersection of sustainable agriculture, food science, and climate resilience. Today, we are joined by three remarkable young researchers, Abba Engström,
Ramdan Orhus Sanu,
and Sofia Cavalleri.
These scientists are tackling some of the most urgent challenges in our agri-food systems, from exploring sustainable practices in vineyards to assessing social sustainability and promoting traditional ecological knowledge. Their work represents a fresh, actionable approach to a more resilient future. Through their insights, we hope to spark ideas and inspire young researchers and innovators worldwide. So without further ado, let's jump in and hear directly from our guests. I would love to start by getting to know all of you a bit better. Abba, could you tell us a bit more about you and give us an overview of your research? How does it relate to sustainability in agri-food systems?
My name is Abba Engström, and I am from Sweden. However, I am currently undertaking a PhD in environmental policy research at Imperial College London. My research focuses on green infrastructure, such as cover crops, flower strips, and hedgerows, in the context of vineyards in the United Kingdom. Specifically, I look at knowledge management surrounding these structures. Green infrastructure can have various impacts in vineyards, including environmental, economic, and social-cultural impacts, and can play a role in contributing to the sustainability of vineyards from a multidimensional viewpoint.
Knowing that you work on green infrastructure in vineyards, which sounds like a very specific yet impactful area, could you share what's important to keep in mind when promoting sustainability in vineyards?
Firstly, I think it's important to consider that green infrastructure can have various forms of impacts related to varying dimensions. For example, from an environmental stance, they can promote biodiversity. From an economic or agronomic stance, they can improve soil structure and reduce soil erosion. And from a social-cultural viewpoint, they can provide aesthetic value. When assessing the sustainability of the green infrastructures, these various forms of impacts need to be examined. Secondly, it is important to consider that green infrastructures can have different impacts depending on the context. For example, in dry and hot environments with limited rainfall and no irrigation, intro vegetation may cause too much competition with the grapevines, but in wet environments with vigorous vines, the intro vegetation may instead provide wanted competition. Additionally, green infrastructures may not solve all sustainability issues associated with vineyards, nor may they necessarily provide all expected benefits despite being implemented.
And as a follow-up, what efforts do you think are essential to enhance sustainability within wine growing systems?
Firstly, for varying wine growing contexts, there is value in conducting further research related to the impacts from green infrastructures, encompassing a multidimensional viewpoint and mapping these impacts against sustainability dimensions and aspects. Secondly, there is a need to effectively communicate research and knowledge surrounding the impacts, implementation, and maintenance of green infrastructures for these to be implemented and maintained in such a way that they provide the most sustainability benefits. Thirdly, policy and agri-environmental schemes, for example, as part of the Common Agricultural Policy of the EU or the environmental land management schemes implemented in the United Kingdom, there is a need to ensure that when these promote green infrastructures applicable to wine growing systems, that they factor in management costs related to reducing negative sustainability impacts as part of the payments made available.
Abba, thank you so much for your answer. Now let's turn to Ramdan. Could you shortly introduce yourself and tell us more about your research? And tell us what led you to social sustainability in agri-food systems.
My name is Ramdan Orhus Sanu, and I'm from Benin, a small West African country where agriculture provides 70% of employment and contributes nearly 25% to the GDP. I am currently pursuing a joint PhD at the United Nations University and the Technical University of Dresden in Germany. My research focuses on the social dimension of sustainability in agri-food systems, specifically on how to assess this aspect. Often, when people discuss sustainability in agriculture, they focus on the environmental dimension. However, social sustainability, which refers to the ability of agri-food systems to maintain and improve the well-being of current and future members of society, is equally important.
I know your research looks at social sustainability assessment. Could you explain what that entails and how its social sustainability is measured within agri-food systems?
Social sustainability measurement uses quantitative indicators, while social sustainability assessment focuses on understanding and evaluating social impacts qualitatively. Therefore, to measure social sustainability, you need indicators. These indicators span the entire agricultural value chain. For example, input indicators include equitable access to sustainable finance and training, and activity-related indicators cover aspects like labor rights and farmers' health, such as when handling harmful chemicals and pesticides. An example of output level indicator is the social acceptability of certain food products. So by combining all of these aspects, we can assess the social sustainability of agri-food systems.
And additionally, we would like to ask you if you could speak about the role of policy in shaping the future of agri-food systems, especially in concerning social sustainability.
While indicators help quantify progress in social aspects, policies play a crucial role in promoting social sustainability within the agri-food sector. Taking the example of an input level indicator such as inclusive access to sustainable finance, our research suggests that fostering financial inclusion in agricultural activities that are culturally relevant and tailored to the local context is essential for reducing the high costs and risks associated with financial intermediation. Therefore, policies that create an enabling environment for financial innovations in local income-generating activities in the Global South can significantly boost the transformation of agri-food systems.
Thank you, Ramdan. Now over to Sophia. Sophia, could you tell us a bit about you and what is your background and what sparked your interest in sustainable agri-food systems?
Hello, everyone. My name is Sophia Cavalleri. I am an ethnobotanist. I have a PhD in ethnobotany. And then after that, I decided to do applied research on Mediterranean diet and traditional Mediterranean medicine. So I decided to settle in Italy, where I am from, in Cilento in particular, in the south, where I met my partner in life and in business, who is a chef. Together, we co-founded Ristolab, which is an innovative startup, and we decided to try to translate complex research into more digestible outputs. So we experiment a lot still nowadays with the sustainable menus that can be really sustainable for the planet, but also for communities. And so biocultural diversity in the plate, and so indigenous ingredients in the plate, nutritional ingredients, and so on. It has been a journey, and I cannot wait to see how it will develop in the future.
As we know, your startup, Ristolab, is working to make sustainable agri-food systems more accessible. Could you explain how your research is applied in practical ways through Ristolab?
So I think I'm very grateful to Ristolab and to Amabile, my co-founder, because we learn every day. We learn a lot on how to integrate gastronomy and research, how really cooking food and also studying about sustainable food systems can really go hand in hand. And I think one of the best things about Ristolab and about the research we are conducting is that it's very accessible, and it's something that everyone can relate to, because everyone eats every day, if we are lucky, multiple times per day. So really trying to be mindful and trying to understand and be curious about the source of our food, seasonality, the farmers, the fishermen that are behind it, the traditions, and how the food that we eat can really be an act of environmental action and preservation of our biodiversity and of the rich biocultural heritage that we have around us. I think it's mind-blowing, and I think it gives us a power in terms of food sovereignty that is unique. And this is how we should really consider food and our role as consumers, I think, as custodians of the knowledge that is traditional ecological knowledge, but also the biodiversity that is around us. So that kind of biodiversity is a richness that we cannot afford to lose. And by eating in the right way, we can also preserve this beautiful heritage.
And on a broader note, what's the role of youth in preserving traditional ecological knowledge, especially in shaping future agri-food systems? And how can policy support this mission?
I think policy has a unique role in shaping the future of traditional sustainable food systems. In particular, if we think here in Cilento, where we are, it's really the roots of traditional Mediterranean medicine in terms of Eleatic School, of Scuola Salernitana, and a rich body of knowledge that was carried on mainly by medical female doctors in the past. And then through medieval times, it got disrupted. So it's a really social and socio-political process to understand how food as medicine has come through history. Anyways, I think that policy nowadays, and in particular the role of youth in policymaking and policy shaping, is crucial to really give visibility to good practices and support those practices, practically speaking, on the ground with great concrete solutions. I think there is no one size fits all. There is no magical solution, but there are practice models that can be implemented and they can inspire other practice models. For instance, in my PhD, I studied traditional Thai medicine, and for me, it was really an inspiration to then go deeper to my roots and to really understand and learn and relearn as well some of the traditional Mediterranean medicine that I was already applying, like with my grandma when we were cooking together, but I really didn't know exactly what it was. And I think being inspired like that to reconnect to our ancestors and to traditional ecological knowledge is what every one of like us should do. And it's not high-level research. It's like indigenous research in a way. It's like connected to the ground, to the soil, and to our ancestors, our communities, and how they developed through history.
Thank you all for sharing your insights and perspectives on your research, and thank you for giving us opportunity to have a better look at the work you do. Thank you one more time.
That concludes today's episode of the Food for the Future podcast. For more updates from the World Food Forum, follow us on social media and visit our website at world-food-forum.org. Until the next time,